denied. The valley below the mountain was alive. For the first time since the world ended, the air wasn't filled with the groans of the dead or the suffocating silence of survival. It was filled with the sound of living. Down in Sector 2, a block party was in full swing. The afternoon sun bathed the newly secured residential streets in a warm golden glow, entirely ignorant of the horrors locked away in the dark, cold depths of the mountain above. The clear teams had done their job with ruthless efficiency. The perimeter walls, fortified by Big Jim's crew using crushed cars and reinforced timber, held strong against the wilderness. Inside those walls, a profound sigh of relief had rippled through the populace. People were moving out of the cramped canvas tents and communal sleeping quarters of the high ridge and down into actual houses, real roofs, real doors that locked. In the center of the cul-de-sac, someone had dragged out a massive charcoal grill scavenged from a hardware store patio display. The smell of roasting venison, hunted from the high pines earlier that week, mingled with the sharp tang of wood smoke. A battery-powered PA system, usually reserved for emergency broadcasts, was playing a scratchy, triumphant classic rock cassette. Sitting at a folding plastic table near the entrance of the newly christened Main Street, Beverly wiped a bead of sweat from her forehead. She looked tired, her hair pulled back into a messy bun, but her eyes held a brightness that hadn't been there in months. Beside her, Tommy sat kicking his legs, a too large baseball cap pushed back on his head. "Okay, Mrs. Gable," Beverly said, flashing a warm smile at the elderly woman standing on the other side of the table. "You're in 412 Oak Lane. That's the blue one with the big porch, right?" "That's right, dear," Mrs. Gable said, clutching a small, battered suitcase to her chest. "It even has a rocking chair left on it." "Tommy, put Mrs. Gable down for 412, Beverly instructed. Tommy, chewing on the end of a pencil, carefully scratched the name onto the thick ledger they had created. "G-A-B-L-E, he murmured to himself, his tongue poking out the side of his mouth in concentration. "Got it." They were building a directory. It was Sam's idea, a way to make the settlement feel like a real town again. If someone needed a medic or a carpenter or just wanted to check on a neighbor, they needed to know where everyone lived. It was bureaucracy, but it was the kind of bureaucracy that meant civilization was taking root. "Next!" Tommy called out, trying to sound official. A shadow fell over the table. Beverly looked up, ready with another blank housing form. The form slipped from her fingers, fluttering to the pavement. Standing there, covered in a thick layer of pale mountain dust, his tactical vest streaked with engine grease and dried black blood, was Jacob. He looked exhausted, the lines around his eyes cut deep with the weight of the last few days. But as he looked down at Beverly and the boy, the hardness in his face fractured, softening into something incredibly fragile.
"Hey," Jacob said, his voice raspy.
"Jacob!"
Tommy shrieked, dropping the pencil and scrambling over the folding table. Jacob caught the boy out of the air, wrapping his massive arms around him and lifting him off the ground. He buried his face in Tommy's shoulder, closing his eyes tightly. Beverly was up a second later, rushing around the table. She didn't say a word. She just threw her arms around Jacob's neck, pressing her face against his dusty vest, not caring about the grime or the smell of the road. Jacob held them both, anchoring himself to the sunlight and the warmth of them, desperately trying to wash away the memory of the dark tunnels and the laughing monster he had left behind in a cage. A few yards away, Sam stood with a plastic cup of water in his hand, watching the reunion. Sam felt a swell of pride. This was his valley now. He had made it safe enough for men like Jacob to come home to their families without having to look over their shoulders. Sam was dressed not in his old scavenging gear, but in a clean, dark tactical shirt, a sidearm strapped securely to his thigh. He looked the part of a leader, and the people passing by treated him like one, nodding deferentially as they carried boxes into their new homes. "The prodigal muscle returns," Carson murmured, stepping up beside Sam. Carson was holding a plate of barbecue, casually picking at it with a plastic fork. He had been practically glued to Sam's side since the commercial district was cleared, a constant, validating presence. "Looks like they had a rough trip." "Let's go say hello," Sam said, ignoring Carson's slightly mocking tone. Sam wove through the celebrating crowd, stepping up to the registration booth just as Beverly was pulling back to inspect Jacob's face for injuries. "Jacob," Sam called out, a broad, welcoming smile on his face. "You made it back. Good to see you in one piece." Jacob gently set Tommy down, his posture stiffening slightly as he turned to face Sam. The unguarded warmth of the reunion vanished, replaced by the guarded, careful demeanor of a soldier reporting to a superior. "Sam, yeah, we made it." "You look like you went to hell and back," Sam noted, taking in the state of Jacob's gear. "Did you catch up to the target?"
"We ran into some complications," Jacob said, his voice measured.
He shifted his weight, his eyes darting toward the mountain for a fraction of a second before returning to Sam. It was a microscopic tell, but in the bright sunlight, it was visible. Sam frowned slightly.
"Is Nicole back?"
Jacob hesitated. It was only for a second, a brief, uncomfortable pause where he seemed to swallow something bitter. He rubbed the back of his neck, breaking eye contact.
"Yeah, she's back. We drove in about 20 minutes ago."
Sam's smile returned, though a flicker of annoyance crossed his mind. She was back, and she hadn't come to find him. She hadn't come down to see the valley, to see what he had built, while she was out chasing ghosts in the wilderness.
"Where is she?"
Sam asked, looking past Jacob toward the switchback road that led up to the main ridge and the fortified entrance of the mountain base.
"I don't know exactly," Jacob lied, the words tasting like ash. "She parked the jeep up top. She said she had to secure some gear. Maybe she went to her office."
"All right," Sam nodded. "Take a breath, Jacob. Get some food. Beverly, put him down for one of the nicer houses on the east side. He's earned it." Jacob only nodded once. He didn't say thank you. He turned back to Beverly, clearly dismissing Sam. Sam turned away, motioning for Carson to follow.
"Come on, let's go give the boss her debrief. I want to see the look on her face when I show her the sector map."
They left the music and the smoke behind, hiking up the steep, winding access road to the main base. That transition from the sunny, open valley to the fortified entrance of the mountain facility always felt jarring, but today it felt particularly cold. Sam and Carson badged through the main security checkpoint, stepping into the dim utilitarian quarters of the old military installation. They took the stairs up to the command level. Nicole's office was situated at the end of the hall. It had been Colonel Bennett's office before the fall. The heavy oak door still bore the faded outline where a brass nameplate had once been bolted. Sam reached for the handle and pushed it open. The room was perfectly still. The desk was neat, covered in topographical maps and inventory manifests, exactly as she had left it days ago.
"Not here,"
Carson noted, leaning against the door frame, picking his teeth with a thumbnail.
"Guess she wasn't in a rush to see your progress."
Sam sighed, pulling the radio from his belt. It was unlike Nicole to just vanish upon returning from a high-risk run. Usually, she wanted a full status report the minute her boots hit the concrete. He keyed the mic.
"Sam, to Paul, you copy?"
Before he could release the button to listen, the radio crackled to life in his hand.
"Sam, it's Paul. Good, I was just trying to raise you on the Valley Channel. Are you up top?"
"Yeah, I'm in the command wing," Sam replied. "Jacob said Nicole got back. I'm standing in her office, but it's empty. Have you seen her?"
"I saw her."
Paul's voice came through, strained and a little confused.
"I didn't talk to her, though. I caught her on the security feeds about 15 minutes ago.
"Where'd she go?"
Sam asked,
stepping out of the office and into the hallway. Did she head to the armory?
No, Paul said. There was a pause, accompanied by the clacking of keyboard keys over the frequency.
She went down, Sam. Deep down. I tracked her on the camera heading into the sublevels. She bypassed the residential floors and took the freight elevator.
Sam stopped walking.
The freight elevator? To the mine shafts?
Yeah. She headed straight for the biological containment sector, the skunk farm. I tried to hail her on the internal comms down there to ask if she needed a team to help unload her gear, but she turned the radio off.
Sam traded a look with Carson. Carson's casual lounging posture evaporated. He stood up straight, his eyes narrowing.
Copy that, Pa, Sam said slowly. I'm heading down there now. Stand by.
Why the hell would she go straight to the skunk farm? Carson asked, keeping pace as Sam broke into a brisk jog before the elevator banks.
That place has been sealed since her old man died. There's nothing down there but empty cages and bad air.
I don't know, Sam said, his mind racing. Had they caught the virus? Was she infected? Was she putting herself in quarantine? If Jacob had been bitten, he wouldn't be hugging Beverly in the street.
They reached the freight elevator. Sam punched the down button. The heavy grate rattled open and they stepped inside, the descent taking them down into the cold bowels of the mountain. The air grew stale, smelling of ozone and wet stone. When the doors opened on the sub-level, the silence was absolute. The emergency lights cast long, jaundiced shadows against the concrete walls. Sam drew his sidearm out of pure instinct, keeping it pointed at the floor as they moved down the corridor toward the heavy, blast-proof doors of the containment wing. Sam stepped up to the terminal. As second-in-command, he had master clearance. He code opened the armory, the food stores, and the motor pool and the gates. He punched in his 6-digit sequence with practice speed. Beep, beep, beep. The light flashed red. The heavy deadbolts inside the door did not react. The digital display read, "Access denied." Sam frowned. He cleared the terminal and typed it in again, slower this time, making sure he hadn't miskeyed. Beep, beep, beep. Access denied.
That's not right, Sam muttered, his pulse kicking up a notch. He hit the heavy steel door with the heel of his hand.
Nicole! Nicole, it's Sam. Are you in there?
Only the dull thud of his hand against the metal echoed back down the hall.
She changed the code, Carson said softly, stepping up to look over Sam's shoulder at the red light.
No, that's impossible, Sam said, trying a third time.
Denied. The master codes are hardwired. Only the commander profile can override them.
Nicole has the commander profile, Sam, Carson pointed out. His voice was smooth, dripping with feigned sympathy, but his eyes were sharp.
She came back from a secret mission, bypassed you, bypassed the rest of her people, went into the deepest, darkest hole in the mountain, and locked the door behind her.
Sam stepped back from the keypad, feeling a cold knot of dread form in his stomach. He stared at the unyielding steel door. He had built walls today. He had secured a valley. He had people cheering his name. But here, in the heart of the base, he was completely shut out.
Maybe there's a protocol, Sam said, though his voice lacked conviction. He was desperately searching for a rational explanation. Maybe she brought back containment supplies. If she thinks there's an exposure risk, standing operating procedure is to isolate the materials and change the local access codes to prevent accidental breaches. It's
a safety measure.
A safety measure? Carson repeated, chuckling darkly.
He circled Sam slowly, like a predator sizing up a wounded animal.
Sam, listen to yourself. You're making excuses for a woman who doesn't trust you.
She trusts me, Sam snapped, turning on him. She left me in charge.
She left you as a babysitter, Carson corrected sharply. And now that she's back, she's locking you out of your own house. If this was just about containment gear, why not call you on the radio? Why not tell Paul? Why sneak around?
Sam looked back at the red light on the keypad. It felt like a glaring, mocking eye.
Jacob was acting weird too, Carson pressed, stepping closer, his voice dropping to a conspiratorial whisper. You saw it. The guy looked like he was going to throw up when you asked him where she was.
He lied right to your face, Sam.
Jacob doesn't lie, Sam said defensively.
He just did, Carson shot back.
And why?
Because he knows whatever is on the other side of that door is something you aren't supposed to see.
Carson gestured back up toward the ceiling, toward the surface.
You have a whole valley up there celebrating. You gave them homes. You gave them safety. And where is she, the great Nicole Bennett? Is she up there shaking hands? Is she thanking the men who bled today? No, she's down here in the dark.
Carson stepped up right next to Sam, leaning in close.
I asked you once before, Sam, what is she hiding? Because people who aren't hiding anything don't change the locks.
Sam stared at the door. He wanted to scream at it. He wanted to kick the keypad off the wall. But mostly, he wanted an answer. He played Carson's question over in his head, searching for a defense, a logical counter-argument to the offer. He found nothing. The silence from the other side of the heavy steel door was absolute, and it was the loudest thing Sam had ever heard. It was the sound of a fracture, a deep, irreparable crack running right through the foundation of everything he thought he knew. "Come on," Sam said finally, his voice cold and flat. He holstered his weapon and turned his back on the skunk farm. Let's go back to the party.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Deadland. The outbreak is spreading, and we want to hear from you. Leave a voicemail letting us know your weapon of choice, your ultimate survival strategy, or just hit us with your most terrifying zombie impression. We might play it on a future episode. Speak your brains out after the beep.